and welcome to Hollywood Blockbusters. I am your host, Joe Hollywood. And once again, I'm joined by Imaginos Pete.
Hey, hey.
And Andrew Walker.
Hello, hello.
George Johnson, special guest, brought a couple of friends. We got a packed house today.
Yes.
How you doing, guys?
Good to see you, George. Thanks for joining
us. Now, is this your brother? Last name?
No relation. There are a lot of Johnsons in this area.
I guess there are a lot of Johnsons.
We're
a lot of Johnsons in this room.
Kindred spirits, I would imagine, though. But
I'll be honest. I thought my meds were kicking. I said, we have more people in the studio.
That's right. I did read somewhere that if I were to run into someone in this area named Johnson, we're probably related. The Johnson name goes way back here in this area.
Oh, yeah.
So today's theme is As Seen on TV. We're going to be talking about movies that were based on television programs and television programs based on movies.
Yeah, right.
And I like that we kept that vague. We'll save the good or bad for when we get into the show.
Now, it's funny you say that because there are some good movies, but mostly bad.
Yeah.
It seems like whenever filmmakers try to jump from the big screen to the small screen or vice versa, usually it seems like the result is unpleasant. Lot of bad movies out there, which we can talk about in a little bit. A few good ones. I'm trying to think, like, for me, let's start off with movies based on TV shows.
Okay.
I'm trying to think, what's the best movie I've ever seen based on a TV show? And I created a quick list, trying to think what jumps out at me. Now, one that comes to mind, I don't know if this is the best one, but one that comes to mind is there was a short-lived TV series. It only ran about 6-7 episodes called Police Squad. You remember Police Squad, Leslie Nielsen?
Yes.
And for some reason, it did not catch on television, and I think it got canceled before all of the episodes aired. But then I don't know what happened with the passage of time. They decided, well, maybe it's best suited for a movie that they created called The Naked Gun from the files of the Police Squad. And it was a monster hit. And they reused a lot of jokes from the TV show in the movie. And it was absolutely hilarious. I remember one of the hardest times I ever laughed watching a movie is when he's out on the ledge and he's sneaking around the ledge on the outside of the building. And as he falls, he grabs this concrete statue by an awkward part. And I'm telling you, I was laughing so hard. I had a roommate at the time. He came out. I was like, what is going on in here? And I'm like, this is hysterical. So I will say that one of the funniest movies ever made was based on a TV show. What do you guys remember Police Squad or yeah. Naked Gun?
Yeah, I do. I do because the end part kind of, this is George speaking for anybody who doesn't know my voice yet, but the end, instead of having the credits where you have a freeze frame and the credits rolling up, they all just stood there and tried to be as still as possible, and they kind of blinked and looked around, and they took deep breaths. That made me laugh so hard. But Leslie Nielsen, I mean, he played the straight guy from, you know, you go back to like the 50s and 60s.
Sci-fi and stuff like that.
Yeah, he was always the straight. He played the straight roles, and then later on he plays these. And, gosh, who's his sidekick in that?
Kennedy?
George Kennedy.
George Kennedy,
also, you know, he's from some pretty strange, pretty wartime movies and things like that, is his side man. God,
yeah,
funny stuff.
And that's what makes the movie work is they're not playing it like a comedy. They're playing it like they're in a drama, and that's what makes it so funny. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so that's definitely one of the funniest movies to be based on a TV show. One of my favorite movies based on a TV show, because I had no idea how they were going to pull this off, but when I was a teenager, I loved The Muppet Show. You know, I tuned in every week. They had crazy cast of guest stars that rotated in every week, and it was always silly vaudeville-type humor. And then I remember hearing that they were going to do a live-action film, and it's like, how are you going to do Muppets in the real world? And when the Muppet movie came out, I think it was like 78 or 79, something like that, it blew my mind. They had an incredible list of guest stars that showed up in the movie. The scene alone of like Kermit riding a bicycle where you're sitting in a theater going, how is this possible? And then you kind of see the behind the scenes later, how they pulled it off. It was all practical effects back then.
Jim Heston.
And yeah, and it's a musical, and there's great songs in it and everything. And so, yeah, one of my all-time favorite movies based on a TV show is The Muppet Movie. It's a classic that still holds up today. Do you guys have any memories of watching The Muppet Movie?
Why are there so many?
That world, yeah, that rainbow. Gave us, that gave the world the rainbow connection.
I know I had to have watched it at a young age, but I don't have any distinct memories of that particular movie compared to, say, like Muppet's Christmas Carol, which I was pretty
classic.
I was young when that came out, and I watched it many times, and
that's a
I
classic.
Loved it.
That Christmas Carol with Michael Caine. Phenomenal acting. Like, he's not in front of any. Yeah, 100%. That's a great one.
I totally agree with this. I saw someone recently say that what makes The Muppet Christmas Carol so great is that Michael Caine is playing it like he's in a serious drama with peers.
Yes.
Like, he treated the Muppets like peers. And last time I watched it, which might have been this past Christmas, I'm like, he's just putting it 100% effort into this thing. He was amazing in this movie.
He doesn't break in a way that you would think he's talking to Muppets. He just plays it completely. Of course he plays it straight because it's Scrooge, but
the man's a true professional.
It's a testament to his professionality and his craft. Absolutely.
Yeah. Dare I say, almost an Oscar worthy performance. He was fantastic.
Really, truly.
So let's go around the room. Nick, what is at or near the top of your list as far as movies based on TV shows?
For me, we were talking about this a little bit before before we got on here. I loved The Fugitive with Harrison Ford. When that came out, I said, how are we going to turn this into a movie? There's so much content here. But they did it. They got the one-armed man.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford gave a great performance. Tommy Lee Jones. I mean, I loved it. And then the other one that I enjoyed was The Equalizer.
Now, that's a more recent one. Let's get back to The Fugitive for a second. I think one of the benefits that the Harrison Ford movie had is my generation didn't have any memories of the original TV show. When did the original TV show air? Like in the 50s or 60s or something like that?
I wouldn't say the 60s.
Yeah, and so I had, you know, no memory of the TV show. I was aware of it. I knew it existed. I knew about the one-armed man. And so the benefit of the movie coming along when it did is there was a whole generation of people that saw it as fresh and new and original, not realizing that it was based on a TV series from the 60s.
Well, I was just watching reruns with my parents because they'd watch it, and I was going, what's this weird show? Why is this guy always running? Why did they leave this doctor alone?
Right. Yeah, I think it's in my top 10 as far as Harrison Ford movies. I thought it was a great, great performance in Tommy Lee Jones.
What I find encouraging is that you could watch that movie and not know about the TV series, and if it still is enjoyable, that tells me how good of a job that they did in the adaptation.
Yeah.
Whereas I would watch that with friends, and they didn't know it was based off a TV series.
Yeah,
exactly. I didn't until a couple years ago, honestly. Until 3 or 4 years ago, I didn't know there was a TV series.
Andrew, every time we think there's a basement, you just find.
Now, since we're on the topic, the reason that we're going with this theme this week is there's a new movie coming out later this year called The Fall Guy. And I can't remember if I brought it up with you or somebody else, but I said, that's a movie based on the TV series. And they're like, what now?
Yeah, I had no idea. I saw the preview with the guys, who I love, Ryan Gosling, and I'm like, this is another action comedy. Hopefully it's good. And then you said that's based on a 1980s Lee Majors TV series. I said, are you kidding me?
Yeah,
it's kind of an interesting thing because if you're looking at the demographic that they're trying to hit, they should have done this 20 years ago.
But, like I said, it has the advantage that The Fugitive had in that there's a generation who's not aware of the show, so they're coming in as if this is a brand new concept.
Completely new, like for me,
And it's already been screened, I think it was at the South by Southwest Film Festival, and people friggin' love it.
It got good reviews.
And I think it was Ryan Gosling said he was at some get-together, maybe it was around the Oscars or something, and he saw Steven Spielberg approaching him, and he's like, is he coming at me? And he like was freaking out, and Steven Spielberg's making a beeline for him, and he went up and like shook his hand and said, "I love the Fall Guy." And he was like, "Really?" Steven nice. Spielberg loved the Fall Guy. So nice. I'm kind of excited. But now I do have memories of the TV show. Like you said, Lee Majors, Heather Thomas was very, you know, she was the cheesecake
smoking
factor.
Yeah.
And Lee Majors sang the theme song of the show, which was hilarious.
Right. Is it kind of like I'm Just Ken?
Sort of, yeah, no, yeah.
Think paint your wagon.
Yeah, right. Now, the funny thing about this theme song is he says something along the lines of in the theme song, "I'm not one to kiss and tell, but I've been seen with Farrah." Well, he was married to Farrah Fawcett.
That's right. That's
and so
right.
It's kind of interesting that he name dropped her in the theme song from the movie. But I'm kind of fired up. I think it's coming out in May or something
fairly soon. Yeah,
yeah
there's a time period where everybody hated Lee Majors. You can't have that much talent and have Farrah Fawcett. I mean, that's just, I mean, why? I mean, that, just you're just rubbing in people's faces.
Fair. Yeah. So that inspired today's topic of movies based on TV shows and vice versa. Now, you mentioned The Equalizer. So The Equalizer started out as a TV show, correct?
Yep.
And I forget the actor, the gray-haired gentleman who was The Equalizer, the actor who played him.
British.
And I watched it periodically, but I wasn't like, you know, I didn't watch it religiously.
Yeah, I wasn't as gung-ho as I was with The Fugitive, but when I saw, they said Denzel's playing the Equalizer, I went, really?
Now, the thing that shocks me about The Equalizer is I was like at Target and I'm looking at DVDs and there's a DVD on the shelf that says Equalizer 3. And I'm like, oh, is that where we're at now? Mm-hmm. Three Equalizers have been done?
Yeah.
I haven't seen them. I'm embarrassed to admit I haven't watched the Equalizer movies. Have you guys seen them? And what are your thoughts?
My God, are you venturing into Andrew's territory? Like, what is
corrupt,
this?
I think he's corrupting.
Yeah. No, I saw the – when I first heard – that Denzel was going to be in. I said, okay, well, this will be interesting. Let me go check it out. And when I saw it, I said, oh, he's challenging Creasy Bear from Man on Fire. This part of this is in here. That was a great, when the performance he gave was excellent. I was going, oh my God, this guy is a dangerous man. There is a scene near the end where he asked the villain, he goes, you know, you asked me what you see when I look into your eyes. What do you see when you look into mine? I went, and then the way Fuqua kind of directed that and showed it, he hangs on Denzel's eyes, and Denzel has the Jaws look. I kept thinking of he's like
the black eyes,
yeah, like a doll's eyes. I was like, yeah, that's it. There's the doll's eyes right there. You're all going to die. This man is going to kill you.
Yeah. Now I've seen clips where you know he's about ready to start a ruckus, and he sets his little stopwatch, and he's like, oh, 15 seconds. That took too long. You know.
No, that his performance. The second movie. It seems to always be the one that suffers. It's the reverse Empire
the
Strikes Back.
Yeah,
for some reason, they get that. I don't know what they're doing. And they redeem themselves with the third one. They try to give it a good closeout. Like, if they're going to do any more Equalizer stuff, it won't be with Denzel. He did his nice little trilogy. He's done. He did a good setup. And it's a good character progression for how this man's trying to find peace. Because this is basically a damaged individual, a weapon that was let off the chain, that you know, and then all of a sudden...
Yeah,
bad guys happen to come across it.
Yeah. And he just wants peace. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Started out as a TV show, ventured into three movies. It is now a TV show again, right?
Right.
With Queen Latifah as the Equalizer. Has anyone seen it? I don't know what to expect. So
there's just so much
curious.
TV. I'm already behind. And I know. Network is the one that always suffers because I go network TV or streaming and cable. Yeah.
So. I'm just curious, like, does she take out six guys in 15 seconds, or does she take a different approach?
On season, it's going to be starting season 3, so it's been getting greenlit, so it's doing its job on network.
I may have to check it out.
I think to your point, in terms of having a lot of options now, I think that's where IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes comes in, because I hate to say it, when I start looking through things, I'll say, wow, that looks really interesting. And the first thing I do, just knee-jerk reaction, is I go to IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes and I find out what other people, because I don't want to get excited.
Yeah.
I don't want to go down that road and watch the first pilot and maybe the first two or three after that, and then realize that I've invested into something that's got a great, because it seems to me like anybody can have a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Great ideas are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the middle part is... You know, whether the middle part is good or bad, it's not that big of a deal. But the ending how you tie everything together, yeah, that's the really tough part to do.
Yeah.
And to your point about the reverse Empire Strikes Back, I love that because Empire Strikes Back is far better than Star Wars. Yeah. Although Star Wars was amazing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
But the problem with that is that you'll see the pilot being really good, and then you'll see the second and third just kind of wandering. Did you guys ever see a show called Rubric?
No.
Anyway, there's a few of them that I've seen where it's such a great idea and it just falls apart. Anyway.
Yeah, there's shows like that. And what things, I'm a big execution guy. Like, you know, you're like George was saying, you can have ideas, but you got to execute it. Mm-hmm. And based on your own, you know, you create whatever rules in your story, then don't violate it. It's almost like they say, well, oh, crap, we wrote ourselves into a corner. Yeah. And then magic new character has a power that comes and saves, or some like, random third party comes and saves this character. I'm like, oh, well, that's unfortunate.
That kind of reminds me of the TV show Lost. I wasn't a big fan of the TV show Lost, but they did not have an ending planned. And you will not convince me that they did. And after several seasons, they were like, they were all in purgatory. And I'm like, you suck.
So pretty much the same thing that J.J. Abrams did with Rise of Skywalker. He had no idea what he was
doing. You
just see like the outline of the middle finger coming like, no, don't give me the middle finger. Don't give the audience the middle finger. Like, it's coming. Like, oh.
You got to have the conclusion in mind to take us on that journey. Otherwise, you're just making it up as you go along.
I will say this. When it comes to all the remakes based off, you know, TV shows and movies, what's happening now is that you're getting a lot of like batting averages, like the Detroit Tigers, like 178, like lower than 200. For anyone that is not a baseball fan, if you can hit 1 out of 3, you're going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
When you're hitting 0 out of 100, 2 out of 100, you're like, you might want to just, you know, take a whistle and blow on it or step into a pitch.
Yeah.
Shyamalan comes to mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? A lot of things are getting green lit. Andrew, what's up or near the top of your list of movies based on TV shows?
My list is longer in the opposite direction, but a movie that I did love based on a show that I loved was The Simpsons movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I saw that in the theater when it came out in 2007. I grew up big 90s kid that just loved The Simpsons, and everything about the movie just it hit all the right spots. And I haven't watched it in forever, but it made more money than I thought. It had a budget of 75, but it made $536 million. Well, so it made a good amount of money.
It was going to.
Everybody saw it.
Yeah. The interesting thing about the Simpsons movie, now I'm of the opinion that the first 10 years or so of the Simpsons is some of the greatest television ever made.
Yes.
I own the first 10 seasons on DVD.
Well written, well conceived.
Yeah, just the writers were just brilliant and made incredible commentary. Then there started to be a turnover of writers who I felt were trying to imitate the Simpsons style but not quite achieving it. So by the time the movie came around, I was like, man, you're like 10 years too late. But then I went to go see it in the theater, and it blew me away. It really held to the standards that were set during that first 10 years or so.
I
could tell when they brought old writers back to help write on that movie, and I could tell parts where the old writers came in, the part when the president's picking the plans. He's like, 2, yeah. Double it, 4.
I think like in the early 2000s is when they started getting to the point of it's like, okay, we've done this many episodes. We're starting to kind of do the same thing with these episodes over and over again. And then, yeah, like you said, this came out in 2007. So I view that as like the capstone of the series. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember how many years it's been since I've actually watched a new episode. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
And it's getting to that part now for the TV series. The voices are changing. Like, you can hear it in their voices now. And I don't
They're sounding older now. Yeah.
You know, this is like, you know, if had Barry Sanders not retired, I didn't want to watch Barry run for 200 yards a season just to get the record. I don't want to, you know, go out on top.
And I feel like that Fox is keeping it alive just for the sake of keeping it alive. And I don't think really anyone's watching it anymore.
No,
I think they're doing it out of spite now because they ripped on Fox so much over the years.
Oh, yeah. They had it written into their contract that they could make fun of Fox and satirize Fox.
This is their revenge now. You don't get to quit. Keep going until your throat falls out.
Yeah, right. It's like a deal with the devil.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I have to say I was pleasantly surprised by The Simpsons movie. One thing I did not expect was full frontal nudity from Bart Simpson, which shocked the heck out of me. The way that gag paid off is he's on the skateboard naked, and they're doing everything in their power to cover up his naughty bits. And then he hits this hedge where only his naughty bits are exposed. And I'm sitting in the theater like, what the hell did I just see? And I've never seen that in an animated film before, and it was absolutely hysterical.
South Park, bigger, louder,
than Oh, I guess, yeah, yeah.
South Park, if anything, South Park was going to do it before The Simpsons did it, because they had that big thing, Simpsons did it, Simpsons did it. Like, no, not this time.
Yeah, yeah. Now, speaking of South Park, there's another animated series that released a film, and it was highly acclaimed, critical, darling. People loved Bigger, Longer, Uncut, and to the point where the one of the songs got an Oscar nomination.
Yeah.
And who was it? Like, I think Robin Williams like performed it at the Oscars or something like that.
I think it was Blame Canada. It's either Blame Canada.
Was it Blame Canada? Yeah. Yeah.
Or what would Brian Boitano do? But
I think it was Blame Canada. And so it was recognized with an Oscar. I don't think it won, but they performed the song at the Oscars. So I never expected a South Park movie to get Oscar recognition.
Parker and Stone thought they were being trolled.
Yeah,
when they got the invite, like, look at this. They were making fun of it, like, oh, it's real. Like, oh my God, what?
Yeah, yeah. So South Park, they're kind of reign with the satire and political commentary and all that stuff.
They've taken over because they can talk about anything that's happening right now. Like,
yeah,
if you want,
and they could turn it out quickly too.
They would make an episode about Israel Gaza right now. I guarantee you, it's probably happening right now.
Oh yeah,
for the season debut, like their season day, they're going like, oh, we're going there. I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah, so that's another animated series that released the movie and was a smash success. What else you got? You mentioned The Simpsons. You got another one?
Yeah, also in terms of animation, the early Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon show, I think it debuted in probably 87 or 88.
Yeah.
The series?
I thought it was a little bit later than that. I thought it was like May 89.
And I know the first film came out in 89, and I think, I can't remember which came first, but I'm pretty sure the series came first.
Oh, there was
comics first, yeah.
Then I think it was the animated series.
Then animated, then movie.
Then you're like, live action film, how are they going to pull this off?
Right.
And it was awesome.
I loved it. I loved the everything about it. My parents bought me all the toys and everything, and I loved watching on Saturday mornings.
I thought they killed Raphael in that movie. I was traumatized to him. Like, he's not moving. Like, get up.
And I haven't watched it in several years, but the last time I did watch it, I remember this holds up decently well for being made in 1989 and being based on a cartoon series.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it was the Jim Henson people. They did the costumes, which were surprisingly flexible and let the actors do martial arts moves and everything, which is really, really impressive.
They could actually emote in those. I actually was pretty impressed that Jim Henson was like, shock, anger, rage.
Yeah. And then now some people, and I don't think I would agree with this, but some people liked two better than one.
That's the Vanilla Ice.
That was the Vanilla Ice movie. And
that man has like an impact on the industry that you cannot imagine.
Yeah. And then over the past few years, they've tried to reboot Ninja Turtles, and the designs are disturbing. Like they're not as fun as the original one was, and they're kind of hard to look at. It's I'm not a fan of the recent movies, but I just rewatched the 1990 version a couple of years ago, and I agree with you. It holds up. It's very, very entertaining.
Yeah,
good.
I would say that along those lines, that Transformers was originally the cartoons. That was a lot of fun. We watched those, I think, in the mid-80s. Mm-hmm. And when they came out with the movie, to your point, it was so overproduced or the shapes and things that they transformed in and out of were so geometrical and so tough that they tried to make the cars and the toys that way, and it was a pain in the neck to try and put them together and get them to do anything. You could just, in the show, it goes, oh my, right?
They
grow or whatever. And in real time, you're sitting there pulling something and you're pushing something, and 20 minutes later, ta-da!
You know?
But it was. I did like some of the Transformer movies, but they didn't have the same, I don't know, camp, or I don't even know what you call that.
Camp, I mean, the cartoon, the movie, in the Transformers movie traumatized me because they killed Prime in that.
Yes!
That was... He's like, die, Autobot. It's like, what's going to happen? He shoots Braun and goes, he's not getting him. Like, get up.
Now, that's the thing. Like, if you talk to someone who's a Transformers fan, hardcore fan, and you say, which of the Transformers movies do you like best? They're like, the animated one. Like, I guess I don't recall ever seeing the animated theatrical release Transformers movies. But
that's the one you're talking about. Yeah, that's the one where he died. That was traumatic. Because what did you do? And then to have him be alive and the same actor's voice, which was really impressive to me.
Yeah.
No, those cartoon guys were bastards. They deserve it. Because what happened after that, they did that because G.I. Joe was going to kill Duke. And then when they saw, and they were like, Duke's going to kill, we're going to kill Prime. And then they saw what happened to the audience. They're like, we can't kill, Duke's in a medically induced coma. I'm like, a serpent went through his heart. What kind of medical, what are we talking about here? And then the TV people, the animators for the cartoon series for Transformers brought Prime back and killed him again.
Oh my God.
This was like, they're like, and when they kill him, because they turn him into like a zombie, and then the
voice actor?
Yeah.
Peter Cullen?
Peter Cullen.
Yeah.
He probably would have won an Emmy for it. He's like, monsters. They turned me into a weapon to destroy those I loved in life. I'm like, what is he saying? I'm like a 10-year-old kid. I'm like, well, you're back. No, what are you doing? He's like,
yeah.
And he does like a kamikaze run to take everyone on. And people are like, this novel will be his farewell. I'm like, what is happening? I'm crying. The announcer comes back, stay tuned next week to the return of Optimus Prime. I'm like, what are you doing with my emotions, man? You can't do this to a kid. Like, I just saw him die. Like his face was melted and scarred. And he's like, until all are one. I'm like, what is going on?
Did therapy help at all? Or
no, it scarred people.
Because I feel like we just dug up some
thank you. I'm glad.
This is the therapy.
That was, I'm having flashbacks. I'm just now, see, that's people who go like, I bet we could mess with some kids.
Now, the interesting thing, so the animated series is on TV. There was talk of doing a live action movie, and I'm like, come on, man. And then I remember seeing like some test animation. It might have been in some car commercial. And they show a car, like, transform into a robot and start dancing. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, the effect was amazing. And so then they released the first Transformers movie, the live-action movie. And I was blown away by the technology. Now, the one complaint I have about the first Transformers movie, and it kind of goes along with what you were saying earlier, is when all the bad guys and the good guys are all fighting in a big climactic battle, I don't know who's who. Like a plane explodes and I'm like, I don't know if I'm supposed to be sad or not. Who was that?
Yep.
And so it was just a blur of action and I couldn't tell who was who. So it kind of lost me toward the end of the movie, but I was blown away by the technology.
That's
that
the Michael
allowed
Bay effect.
Yeah.
Michael Bay's like, I don't have anything for the story. More explosions.
Yeah. Now, I will say this. I enjoyed the first Transformers movie. But I actually loved Dark of the Moon, which was the one that Leonard Nimoy came in and voiced one of the characters. The
Sentinel Prime,
And I'm like, this movie has emotion and some weight to it. And I'm like, wow, I really reacted to that movie. So Dark of the Moon's pretty good.
I am a giant, giant turd of a hypocrite. Because even though I criticize those movies, my friend and I almost kind of go, it's almost like we're punishing ourselves, like we hit ourselves, like the monk from Da Vinci Code. Like, we keep hitting ourselves, like, we're going to go watch the movie. We're like, it's still Transformers, we've got to watch. And then we're like, you know, all the things that were wrong with this movie.
Yeah. Now, I will say this. I can probably count on one hand the number of movies I've walked out of, like, in a theater. And the last night, which is one of the more recent ones, I got up and walked out of. And I'm gonna steal a line from Mr. Howell on Gilligan's Island. He said, I'd walk out of that movie on an airplane. Yeah. It was awful. The last night was the first 10 minutes or so, I had no idea what was going on. It was jumping from location to location. I was lost. And I was like a dealer in Vegas. I'm out. I got up and walked out.
And this is how I know that Bernie Madoff screwed Hollywood, because you had Anthony Hopkins, Stanley Tucci, John Malkovich, all having roles in these movies, and they needed that paycheck. They needed that paycheck. They knew that script. These are Oscar winners. They needed that paycheck.
Wasn't John Turturro?
Yeah, John Turturro. I mean, all these classic actors are in there because, you know what? Bernie did it to him.
Or now, I will say this. If you haven't seen Bumblebee, check out Bumblebee. I absolutely loved Bumblebee. Haley Steinfeld.
Because they changed the designs. I kind of what George. It didn't look as like a bunch of rocks, like sharp rocks and geometric.
Well, in the animated series, Bumblebee was a VW Bug, and so it was kind of cool that they brought back the VW Bug for
as a Camaro,
that
wasn't
movie.
It?
Well, the Camaro was in Transformers and
those
early
they went
movies.
Back to the Bug.
And Bumblebee, it was a VW Beetle, and
it makes
and
much more
great.
Sense than a Camaro. Yeah. Honestly, it really does.
So some people might not watch that movie and just dismiss it, and I'm like, no, check it out. It was a good girl in her car story. I really, really enjoyed Bumblebee. So, yeah. All right, George, why don't you give us one or two of your favorite movies inspired by television?
Star Trek.
I can't believe we're, 30 minutes into the podcast, and this is the first time it's coming up.
You guys have regular Star Trek references? Is that like the gravitational pull? It pulls you back?
Yeah, no, that's a great one to bring up.
So the first one that came out, we saw when I was a kid, and it was
the most
terrible.
Picture,
the first one was absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
But I think, if you look at the old reviews on it, you had such a low budget from the 60s. You know, you had people literally going, or for the doors, or, you know, things like that. And it was pretty hokey. And some of the you know, Kirk would get thrown up against a wall and the whole thing would, like, move. You know, what the hell's going on with the Starship Enterprise? This thing's falling apart.
Yeah.
Suddenly now they have a much bigger budget. And suddenly there's maybe the Stanley Kubrick 2001 effect where everything is much heavier. There's much more gravity. The sets are more solid. They're filming with much better equipment. It's not the same lighting that they used for, you know, Days of Our Lives a half hour earlier. And it makes all the difference so that when they come back fighting with number two, Star Trek II, I don't remember if that's Wrath of Khan.
That's Wrath of Khan, which most people regard the greatest Star Trek movie ever.
Oh, yeah, and who knew that it was
Ricardo Montalban
from Fantasy Island. Correct. And you thought that he would come out, welcome. Instead, he was this mean bastard. He put, like, earwigs in your whatever they are, these worms in your head.
I'm like,
that
Chekhov?
Scared me so bad.
And Ricardo Montalban has gone on record saying that is his chest that we see in that movie. A lot of people said it was a
plastic
prosthetic or something. That was his chest. He was very, very fit. Mm-hmm. And now here, the interesting thing about Star Trek is the TV series allowed Star Wars to be made. Star Wars allowed Star Trek, the movie, to be made.
Oh, great point.
And so here, I'm a kid coming off Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica, all these action-packed space.
Oh, Battlestar Galactica.
So imagine sitting in the theater going, all right, finally getting a Star Trek movie, and it was one of the most boring movies I've ever seen. I'm like, where's the action? They redeemed themselves with Wrath of Khan. It had some awesome space battles.
And it kicked off like a nice little trilogy because 2 connects to 3, connects to 4. And like when they go back in time to the 1980s, like San Francisco, I'm like, this is great.
Oh, the Save the Whales.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you guys have heard of this. Most people agree that all the odd number Star Trek movies are trash and the even number Star Trek movies are critically acclaimed. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I've tried watching some of the odd-numbered movies, and I'm like, oh, not that bad. But that's the general consensus, is that the even ones are good, the odd ones are bad.
I mean, Search for Spock has its... You have Christopher Lloyd as a Klingon. I mean, come on.
Marty!
Yeah, so I don't know. But then the cool thing is after several movies with the original cast... Then Star Trek The Next Generation, which I absolutely loved. That was best television.
Ah.
And so then they transitioned with First Contact, and then we got to see, like, Picard and Kirk interact and stuff like that. So the transition from the original series to Next Generation in the films was just awesome.
I tried to ruin marriages and friendships by saying that for generations to have their movie, they still needed Kirk to come and hand them off.
With that. For some reason, there was like a lack of legitimacy for anything that came out that didn't recognize or pay some kind of homage or some kind of connection to Kirk and Nimoy and all that.
And he still needed himself. Like, you need Kirk to do your little fist fight, huh, Picard? You wind-drinking little so-and-so. And
I don't know if he ever had a fist fight. Did Picard ever get into a fist fight?
No, but he turned. They made him a badass in the TV series. He got the Noskin blade stuff, and he's laughing about it. I'm like, oh, my God, man, you got gut, and you're like, where's that guy? Why does that guy need an old, retired Jim Kirk to fight his battles against, you know? I mean, come on.
Now, speaking of passing the baton, when they rebooted Star Trek with Chris Pine and those guys, they brought Nimoy back in to help pass the baton. Yep. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Quinto was his son, I think, or was it him? No, that was him.
That was Spock in the alternate.
It was one of those movies.
Oh, no, you're right. He was the younger version of the
It was movie Etch-a-Sketch, like, we need to... So I'm going to bring you in and create an altered timeline. So now
and
everything
that's what
is
they
new.
Did. Yeah, they passed through that wormhole or whatever it was and said, okay, we got a clean slate where anything
Leonard Nimoy
Spock happen.
Came to here and changed the whole where Kirk's dad, the way he died and all that kind of stuff. So like, we get to start over. I'm like, you crafty little bastards.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know. Back to the Future was cool, like part one and part two. But when they went to part three, I think Doc Brown had to pull out a whiteboard and, like, actually diagram it. I'm like, that makes sense. I was waiting for that whiteboard moment, and it never happened. Like, what are you guys talking about?
But looking at the audience. Yeah. What happened was...
Let's pause the story for a moment while we explain what the hell we're doing.
I like that he was explaining that, but he treated Marty like he's a dumbass. He's like, Marty, we can't go back to the future, because from here, this is what will happen. Like, oh, okay, all right.
Now, speaking of the Star Trek reboot, I don't know about you guys. I absolutely loved it. I loved how Chris Pine sort of emulated William Shatner and had the movements and mannerisms and the arrogance. I thought he did a really nice job of catching the essence of Shatner. And from what I heard, I think there's at least one more Star Trek movie coming with that cast. And then they're going to have to look at rebooting it again, I guess.
So this is going to really surprise you, Nick, but the only Star Trek movies or TV series I've ever seen are the two... J.J. Abrams and then the third one was James Wan, right? But I've not seen a single episode of any of the, and I've never seen any of the original
movies. Never
movie.
Seen any of the which
never.
One? You've seen the series though, right?
Never. I've only seen the two J.J. Abrams and then number three reboot with
Andrew,
directed by James Wan. That's all.
That
just
blows
that's
all my mind.
But I liked them,
Andrew. It's things like this that gets.
Credibility destroyed. No,
I'm
kidding.
This is every episode.
And not just that, I think this is not your stuff. Like, this is how the citizenship test gets rewritten in America. Like, you are, like, they're going
to
start
if
putting
aliens
this stuff
come
down.
To the earth and all of a sudden live among us, and we need to test you to find out if you're a true U.S. citizen, true American, and you fail that, we're gonna roast you.
It's who's on Mount Rushmore? Get that out of there. Have you seen Star Trek?
Benedict Cumberbatch like turned out to be Khan. I'm like, all right, that's cool. Who's Khan?
Wow. Yeah. I gotta ask.
We have company here. We have company, and you do this?
Right.
You do this in front of company?
I need a big lever here to the trap door that Andrew is sitting over.
That really shocks the heck out of me.
I want
to talk about one thing and get your angle on this. I love what you just said, Joe, and that is you said Star Trek made it possible.
For Star Wars.
Yeah. Where do you, as a side note, where do you put 2001 in there?
Ooh. Well, 2001, it went for more of a realistic take on space. Like when you watch Star Wars, you hear lasers in space and spaceships banking on a turn. And it's
aliens.
Like, and then you got Neil deGrasse Tyson having an aneurysm because it's like, that's not the way space works. So 2001 took the more realistic approach. I think 2001 works as sort of a drama, kind of a horror film sort of a thing. But as a kid growing up with Star Wars and all this, when I saw 2001, I'm like, this ain't Star Wars. So it's not.
There's a lot of boring stuff. And
yeah,
a lot
it's
of really
pretty
like,
dry.
I mean, this is 1969.
Yeah.
Somebody was doing some serious LSD.
And then the end. Yeah, the end is like,
there's
what
so
is
many interpretations.
I'm hoping they got the murderous AI wrong.
Well, you know what? It was weird, and I have to assume this was deliberate, but if any of you have ever seen Disney's take on Star Wars, they did the black hole,
which
and
was
the
great.
Black hole has
it.
The exact same ending as 2001 with the psychedelic going into, and into the black hole. People are getting stretched, and it took the same out as 2001. Like, what is happening here? And yeah, so it stole a page from 2001. But I personally love the black hole. That was a fun movie.
I think it also led to. Look what else came out of that. We got Alien, which is one of my very all time favorites.
Yes, mm-hmm.
And that had more gravity to it, but it was also the. And then if you look at Jurassic Park is basically an Alien remake, instead of in a spaceship, you're on an island. Anyway,
yeah,
I think we talked about as a generational thing. What Star Wars was when all of you saw the Star Destroyer going overhead was for us when we first saw the dinosaur in Jurassic Park. It was like that moment. I was like, dinosaurs are real. I knew it.
Yeah.
Oh, the part where Laura Dern and
Sam Neill.
Come over and she's got that plant in her hand.
And she goes,
this hasn't existed. And he reaches his hand down. Exactly.
Yeah,
and he turns her head.
And they cued with the
John
Williams.
And you don't see it.
Yeah.
And they cue exactly the music. And you don't see it. And you're like, what are they looking at? And then you look at it and you go, and that's the first time you really see some really fantastic CGI.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely jaw dropping. And I almost peed my pants and cried at the same time.
We've talked about on the show before how well that CGI still holds up today.
Right.
It's amazing.
31 years later, it still holds up excellent.
Yeah.
Because my brother saw Star Wars in the theater, and he was like, "You had to be there, boy."
It was amazing. Let's talk about a franchise that was inspired by a TV series that is probably the most lucrative franchise based on a TV series. This series was not on my radar when I was young. I didn't know a whole lot about it. I was aware of it, but I didn't know a lot about it. But there was a TV show in the 60s called Mission Impossible.
Yes.
And years later, decades later, they kind of take that title and reboot it with Tom Cruise. And I don't know what number Mission Impossible movie we're on. It's got to be closing in on 10.
I think Dead Reckoning 1 was number 9, right?
So that was split into two films.
Yeah,
so
the second one comes out, I think, in June, right?
Yeah. Now, my recollection, seeing the first Mission Impossible in theaters, I wasn't all that impressed. I thought it was okay. But, you know, I was getting the whole ripping the mask off to reveal that this actor was wearing a mask the whole time. That got very tiresome quickly. And then I think it was Mission Impossible 2. I, like, hate it. Like, I'm like, this is bad.
Everybody had a mask.
Yeah.
Is anybody who they say they are?
It was a trope. But then they started getting better. And MI3 was better. And MI4 improved on that. And just the characters that form the team, I started to like all the actors and all the characters that form that team.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with each new movie that came out, they made a point of making sure that the audience was aware that indeed is Tom Cruise clinging to that plane or hanging off the side of the building.
Breaking his ankle.
So that when you're sitting in the theater, you're not dismissing it as CGI. You're like elbowing the person next to you. That's Tom Cruise up there. And his star power alone has made that franchise enormously successful and enormously entertaining. And I've loved the last 7 or 8 movies in that franchise. Yeah.
So I got to insert 2 seconds into here. If you compare the Mission Possibles with what the franchise of the James Bond was doing at that point, mm-hmm. I remember seeing the first Mission Impossible and thinking to myself, this is so much better than what James Bond had devolved to.
Mm-hmm.
This is pre-Daniel Craig, which I think was a massive reboot. Don't get me started on that.
That was right around Pierce Brosnan's GoldenEye.
So that would have been 95, 95 was GoldenEye, 96 was
Mission Impossible.
Yeah. Well, you guys are into it anyway. I just remember I saw a James Bond where the villain is in outer space and he shoots a laser and it somehow creates a tidal wave and Pierce Brosnan rides a car door.
That was the last one he did.
And I just about got up and walked out and thought, I hate this. I absolutely hate this. And I think the Broccolis or whatever the family who owns the franchise, this is ridiculous. But I felt at that time that Mission Impossible, even though it's cheesy, you look back at it now, you kind of go, that was still, in my opinion, much more based in reality, minus the mask thing, which was kind of, you know, cheesy. But
yeah, there's still technology in the Mission Impossible movies that don't quite exist in real life. But to elaborate on your point, movies like Mission Impossible, the Bourne Identity movies, and movies like that, even, I don't know if you guys remember XXX with Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
Those movies basically were saying, we're not your father's James Bond anymore. Yeah. And I think that was a kick in the pants to the Bond franchise to go the Daniel Craig route. Because these guys were doing things in movies that Bond should have been doing, but were getting really silly and cheesy. And so that you could almost say the Daniel Craig movies are like a reboot.
To what 100% agree. To what you're saying, the Pierce Brosnan movie where he's riding the tidal wave, that was James Bond's Batman and Robin.
It really was.
It was our low point.
That was the jump the shark.
Die Another Day?
Yes, that was Die Another Day.
2002,
I've seen that once, and I never want to revisit that again.
I'm going to defend the movie a little bit. It did have Halle Berry in it, who I love. And
eye candy.
Some people dismiss the invisible Aston Martin Vanquish, or Vanish, as they call it. But for me, Bond movies need the Bond girl, the Bond villain, the Bond henchman, and the Bond vehicle, the Bond car. And so I love the invisible Vanquish, but a lot of people point to that as a moment where it's like, okay, this is getting a little ridiculous.
Like, I mean, it was Fast and the Furious type crazy before Fast and the Furious had even come out. We're flying cars in space. Like, what?
Yeah. And so now Fast and Furious, I think, is taking a page from the Mission Impossible movies and incorporating technology and cyber scamming and all this stuff. And you're like, I thought you guys were street racers movies ago.
Yeah, they've gone so – I don't even know what they're doing at this point. I'm like, all right.
They took a Fiero to space.
Yeah, I'm like,
a Fiero.
A Pontiac Fiero.
You're right.
To space.
I mean, how do you think Neil deGrasse Tyson's doing now? He's like, what is happening right now? What is this?
It's visiting the one that Elon Musk shot into outer space, right? Shot a Tesla out there.
That one that's still floating around out there. But yeah, so the Mission Impossible movies have been enormously entertaining. And the last one that I saw, I felt the last one was taking a page from the Fast and Furious movies, which is hilarious because Fast and Furious was kind of taking a page from Mission Impossible. Now Mission Impossible is taking a page from Fast and Furious. But there's a scene, and I don't consider this a spoiler or anything, but there's a moving train. The woman is in peril, and Tom Cruise comes flying in through a window at the exact moment to take out the bad guy. And
because he was parachuting down. Everything was fine up until that. When that happened, I'm like, what are we? Come on, Tom.
Yeah. I pulled a muscle when I rolled my eyes during that scene. I had to go see a specialist.
Yeah, I did like a Top Gun Maverick. My eyes rolled all the way back and they came back forward. I'm like, what is happening?
So, but yeah, no, you can't deny that the Mission Impossible movies have been really entertaining, and I'll be there for the next one to see how it all
concludes.
That's
the big ticket now because they know Tom's last movie's coming up because, man, 60, and he can't. They were showing him running. He's doing a full Tom Cruise Mission Impossible run. They put that on Instagram. I'm like, this man can't move, but I'm like, come on. At the end of it, he was going, I'm like, there it is, Tom. No matter what Scientology says, that's age. It catches us all, my friend.
Yeah.
Xenu cannot stop
I gotta say, it was very impressive to me. It gave me a lot of hope. As a 53-year-old male, I'm looking at him going, okay, if I can get a personal trainer.
Yeah.
Well, there's one moment in this new one that came out recently. There was one moment where he leaps from a cliff and he's doing like free fall and he's talking, I think in his, you know, earpiece or whatever, and his skin is flapping. And I forgot who this was. I thought, oh, that's pretty impressive CG. Then he like pulls the ripcord on his chute, launches away from the camera. And I'm like, oh no, he really jumped off the side of this cliff.
Yeah.
And I was embarrassed. Like, no, this is Tom Cruise. He doesn't do this CGI.
That's the motorcycle scene.
Yeah.
Where they did that scene 6 times apparently. I'm like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
You risked a multi-$100 million actor how many times?
Yeah.
That's the first scene of the movie because they said, you know, whatever happens to Tom, there's no movie after that, so we shoot that first and see if we're going to do a movie.
I heard
And you watch the director age a decade each time he does it. Like he had like black hair and he's like, "Oh, at the end of it."
Well, say what you will about Tom Cruise, he puts butts in the seat
and
he is one of the last great movie stars.
Yep. That's their big search. Yeah, what happens to the Mission Impossible franchise after him? They're putting out that search now, just like who's the kid who just got
Aaron Johnson, who became the new Bond.
Yeah.
Is that official?
Wait, yeah, is that
he's
official?
Been offered the role from what I've read.
Oh, yeah. Okay. He's been offered. He hasn't been. He has to accept.
Yeah, but he's more than likely going to be the next James Bond.
I really was hoping, because for a hot second there, they had an African-American or African.
Idris.
Idris Elba, yeah.
No. In the movie itself, they had.
Oh, the lady, yeah.
The lady for a hot second.
Oh, she was like 006 or something like that.
I thought she was 007. Anyway, I thought she would have been a very interesting character. I thought that would have been a lot of fun. But I did like the idea of Idris Elba. They just waited too long, I think.
Then what happened was the Warner Brothers DC fell apart, and then they're like, Henry Cavill's going to be James Bond. They're like, oh, somebody else got him.
Yeah.
Yep.
Speaking of Henry Cavill, since we're on the topic of TV shows and movies, I'm really disappointed that the movie that he did, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., didn't turn into a franchise. I really
that was a good movie.
Enjoyed The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It was a classic TV
series. I actually saw that movie.
Yeah.
But only because I had to see Alicia Vikander.
Oh, she was
beautiful. Okay. I had to see her.
I don't know why that wasn't franchised. I don't know if it just was a disappointment at the box office.
It was him and Armie Hammer and her. Yeah. And
Armie Hammer didn't help matters at all.
No, he did not.
Yeah. I think she had a piece of her ear missing after one scene with them. Anyway, we won't go into that. But
wow!
But I thought it was a decent movie. That came out 2015, 2016.
Yeah,
something
Andrew,
like that.
Yeah. I didn't even care for the reason. I'm glad you just saw it in theater. I don't care if it was at gunpoint or.
I didn't see it in theater. I rented it.
Oh, that's fine. You know,
okay.
But no,
A-. It's fine.
That was Guy Ritchie, right?
Yeah.
I think so,
and I'm not usually a big Guy Ritchie fan, but I enjoyed that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we'll ever see that get rebooted or remade, but I was disappointed that didn't get any sequels. Another movie I want to bring up, and this is probably going in the opposite direction, but I remember when the announcement was made for the Brady Bunch movie, I was like angry. I was like, oh, don't touch the Brady Bunch. But then I saw it in theaters and was pleasantly surprised because it wasn't necessarily like a true reboot or anything like that. They weren't trying to recast these characters in new situations. It was a loving parody that poked fun at the Bradys in the real world. Yeah. So here's this fictional TV family living in a real world. And I was pleasantly surprised with the Brady Bunch movie. They brought back Davy Jones for a cameo. And it because whoever made that movie treated it with, you know, kid gloves, with just this loving respect for the Brady Bunch, it made that movie work. But then they went and did a sequel that I just hated. They had Greg and Marcia kissing in the sequel, where I yelled out loud in the theater, "No!" So the sequels were pretty awful, but that reboot or whatever you want to call it was a loving parody and really enjoyed it. I thought everyone knocked it out of the park.
They should have had Greg and the mom make out, just like in real life.
Right? Well, in real life, yeah. He had a crush on Mrs. Brady.
Right.
Who didn't?
That's right.
Yeah.
No, I feel like when it came to TV shows that got turned into movies, comedy really took it in the face. Because we were talking about McHale's Navy, Sergeant Bilko. It didn't
Starsky and Hutch.
Starsky and Hutch. A lot of the Saturday Night Live reboot.
Dukes of Hazzard.
Dukes of Hazzard.
Well, that might be a good segue to talk about some of the worst ones.
Yeah.
The Dukes of Hazzard was an unnecessary reboot with Johnny Knoxville in the lead role.
Yep,
and
yep.
I'm like, why was he given the reins of this beloved, you know, series? And I hated it. I saw it in the theaters, but I hated it.
Yeah, I didn't. I was like, I don't know, 17 or 18 when it came out, and would have been like the prime demographic
for it.
And I was like, oh, this was bad.
Yeah.
Why did I spend $8 to watch this in the theater?
Somehow it always seems to me on a movie like that you know what the conversation was 2 years prior to that.
Yeah.
There's brand recognition here. We got to cobble something together because I know that if we throw that up on a poster, If we have, you know, a girl with big boobs and we have some fast cars going back and forth, we're guaranteed to make minimum of $50 million, no matter what no matter what the script is, no matter what we do with it.
Plus,
and that's the hijacking of the American people, and yeah. I hate that.
Johnny Knoxville's hot coming off a Jackass. And so sure.
And I don't know if you remember this, Burt Reynolds was cast as Boss Hogg in the movie. But what a disaster, and they should have just left well enough alone.
I mean, there was like in the 90s too, 90s to early mid-2000s, that decade, it was like, yeah, the Mod Squad, yeah, the Avengers.
Here's a list of some of the movies. Now, maybe you guys liked them better than I did, but I did not care for the A-Team. One thing they did in the A-Team reboot with Liam Neeson is they took a character from that show and destroyed it, and that was the van. The A-Team van is one of the most iconic vehicles in TV history, and within 15 minutes or so of the movie, they destroyed it. And I thought, well, that'll give them an opportunity to maybe reveal a new van somewhere during the movie. And they did not.
And they took out Baracus.
It's a character.
They took out BA in the entire movie. Like, he became this weird pacifist for some reason that doesn't want to do anything. And the last 5 minutes, he's like, nah, I'm going to fight. I'm like, okay, well, you're here as what else were you there for? Like, you were the muscle. You're like, you were the intimidator.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, you were the engineer. Like,
yeah, I didn't like the tone of the movie. It was a big middle finger to fans of the series.
Yeah.
Another movie I did not care for was Beverly Hillbillies. You had Jim Varney as Uncle Jed. That was a disaster.
Yeah, no.
One movie that's widely regarded as one of the worst movies ever made was Bewitched, which was Will Ferrell and Nicole Kidman. In the roles of Samantha and Darren Stewart.
There's no chemistry there for starters.
And someone said, we'll try to get meta, but like, he's playing Darren. That's Will Ferrell is playing Darren in a TV show about this thing. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
That got out of the pitch. And Will Ferrell, he's had his moments where he has like two of the probably in the top 10 worst comedies, Land of the Lost.
Yeah, that was on my list too. Like, I was a big fan of the show. Now, obviously, watching it as an adult, the effects were just awful. But growing up, I loved Land of the Lost. And so then they're like, oh, we're going to do a new reboot of Land of the Lost. And it was terrible, just terrible. And it's like, how do you get dinosaurs wrong? How do you screw up dinosaurs?
Well, that's good. But the bad script and bad story and like a lot of people putting their fingers in it. He had another one. He had the Sherlock Holmes thing with what's his face?
Yeah, John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly,
Holmes and Watson that people hated.
That's rocking a hot 14% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. Ooh, wow.
nobody saw that movie.
He had a stretch where this was, you know, he'd had old school, semi-pro, you know, Ron Burgundy. You know, he had Anchorman.
Yeah,
he was on like a
Those are some good ones, Elf.
For Will Ferrell. And then all of a sudden he hits this rut. I'm like, oh, my God, you're on like an M. Night Shyamalan tailspin, man. You got to pull out.
Yeah. Now, here's one. I'm surprised if any of you remember this movie at all, but do you recall that there was a theatrical reboot of the Lost in Space TV series.
Yep.
You guys remember this at all?
I do now. Thank you for undoing years of therapy.
When you say a theatrical reboot, meaning it was live or...
No, it was a movie theater movie release called Lost in Space that was based on the old TV series from the 60s. And not a lot of people remember this movie today. Matt LeBlanc was in it. I think he played Major West in it.
Yep.
I can barely remember the other actors that were in it. I think, why am I drawing a blank? He's an acclaimed actor. He played the villain, I guess, in the show. They retooled the robot and everything, and it was pretty much instantly forgettable. And it's a sound concept. I mean, you know, Lost in Space was doing its thing before Star Trek, if you can believe it.
Yeah.
Lost in Space was on TV before Star Trek. And the idea of being flung out into space and running into new species and planets and everything, you know, that was borrowed heavily later on Voyager, Star Trek Voyager. It's a sound concept, so I don't know why they botched it so badly. But
I tried to invent a Men in Black neuralizer to forget that, and I just single-handedly started to undo a lot of the stuff. Thank you, John.
But, Lost in Space. Another one, The Flintstones.
Oh.
You, I wanted to love the Flintstones, but it's just, again, that, John
that,
Goodman
that, that
was
capitalized on brand recognition. John Goodman, yeah. and
I love John Goodman. And how did he fall apart? I mean, just it felt. I don't think it was his fault. I just think that somebody.
Yeah, I thought
cobbled
he played
together.
A great wow. Fred Flintstone.
Rick Moranis as Barney.
Yeah, yeah.
Had,
hey Fred. Yeah.
Rosie O'Donnell as Betty. Right. White.
That was a strange.
Rosie O'Donnell
Betty White.
Was. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Betty Rubble. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. That was a strange casting.
Kyle MacLachlan was in it. Coming hot off some yeah. David Lynch movies.
Yeah. And I think even Elizabeth Taylor was in it. She was like yes. Wilma's mother or something. But yeah, it just wasn't all that memorable, and it sort of came yeah. and went. And
it
I think
made
there
enough
might have been
box
some...
office to justify a horrible sequel.
Yeah, yeah.
That Bangalore. Like,
Viva Rock stick. Vegas.
Oh, jeez. Oh. Yeah.
I
yeah.
did not see that. And even as a kid, I was like, nope. Stupid.
If you didn't see it, why do you have to remind the rest of us about the title? We're trying to forget it, and here you go, hey, Viva Rock Vegas. Look, there it is.
Yeah.
There are the nightmares.
Now, I'm going to throw out one more title, and I know you guys are going to give me blank stares on this one. What is your reaction when I give you the title, The Nude Bomb? The Nude Bomb.
Is that another Leslie Nielsen?
No, that was the
no.
Naked
I
was
the naked I am thankfully in the dark on
that's
this.
The porn parody of Dr. Strangelove. Right? No,
that might be a better movie.
I was going to go with that. Yeah.
The Nude Bomb, if you can believe it, and I saw this in theaters when it came out, was the movie release based on the TV series Get Smart.
Whoa.
Starring Don Adams. He returned to play the role of Maxwell Smart.
Whoa.
And it was a box office disaster. It was about a villain who created a bomb that made people's clothes disappear. And
this
and
got out of a room. It got made. This went into production.
Yeah. Now, they did reboot it years later with Steve Carell, right. And that was one and done. That had Anne Hathaway in it, Steve Carell, Get Smart.
That wasn't bad. I actually kind of liked that.
I didn't think it was terrible.
Could have gone someplace, I think. Yeah.
It could have been the Inspector Gadget with Matthew Broderick. I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? No, stop.
I just
that was a weird take on
that.
Yeah.
Inspector Gadget and Get Smart are two different movies. They're two different concepts.
Yeah,
but it's
are.
But it's
yeah.
Don,
you're reminding me.
But it's Don yeah. Adams doing the voice of Inspector Gadget, is it not?
You're right. Yeah, there is that connection. Yes.
So there's that
go,
connection.
Go, Gadget. Right. Yeah, that was Don Adams. That's
I loved Inspector
point,
Gadget.
Mind,
yeah, the cartoon was fantastic.
I love this cartoon. Yeah.
I did watch Inspector Gadget. The cartoon, I did like that as a kid.
Oh, that's yeah. That's consistent.
Now, did you see the live action?
No.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I've ever saw it, but I had no interest.
No,
in
I did.
That.
And
yeah.
I, you know, that's fine. You know, between the two of us, you know, you take most of the hits, and I'll take some of the crap stuff that you miss. I'm like, oh, I saw Inspector Gadget in the theater. I'm like, oh, this is a swift kick to family jewels.
Now,
go nut punch.
Now, since we're talking about TV shows and movies, I want to bring up this subgenre of movies based on SNL characters and skits.
Oh, boy.
This is a very hit-and-miss
subgenre. I have
subgenre.
Printed out because I was thinking the same thing,
there
my
you
friend.
Go. That's, yeah.
This is Lorne Michaels' fault. This is his revenge for something that was done to him.
Yeah. Now, there are some great movies to come out of it. One
yes.
of my all-time 100 favorite movie list has...
I can say it. I know what it
what
is.
What is it?
The Blues Brothers.
Blues Brothers.
Oh, I thought you were going to say It's Pat.
No.
Oh.
I don't know if I've ever seen it.
0%
right?
Blues Brothers is yeah. one of my all-time favorite movies. And
so well.
I don't even know if you can say it's based on an SNL skit, because really it was just these guys performing on stage as the musical
It
game.
Counts. Don't take that away from them.
Yeah.
They need all the wins they
that
can get.
That was enormously entertaining. Wayne's World is right
yes.
up there.
Yeah,
now, that's
great.
Actually based on a sketch. And, you know, working in the field of public access television my whole life, to see a movie about public access television in Wayne's World was just made me smile.
Yep.
Now, I rewatched Wayne's World recently, and I don't think it holds up as well as it did when it first came out, but it's still a pretty entertaining movie. But, you know, Michael Myers just sort of winking and mugging for the camera, like it gets old quickly, but but that was one of the biggest movies to come out of an SNL sketch.
I can remember really liking it though at the time. I
yeah,
can remember
yeah. oh,
really liking
phenomenon.
Mike
yeah.
Myers. It was pre-Shrek. It was
Austin Powers.
Yeah.
Austin Powers. And,
oh, yeah.
And you kind of did crave, at least I did, I craved more Mike Myers. Like,
oh,
wow, this guy's really fun. He should. And so to have him break out was kind of like, oh, this is novel. This is interesting. So I think there was that going for it. But if you look back at it now, a lot of the jokes are you know, fourth grader kind of jokes.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And just, they're kind of stuck at that time. They're stuck in 1991.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to love those, but it's too bad they didn't have a few in there that were more a little bit more cerebral to kind of hold up. But they
and they seem so desperate to try and make certain catchphrases catch on, like, you know, swing and all that stuff. Like, when you watch the movie, it seems so desperate. Like, they're throwing all these out there going, some of these got to catch on.
Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah. So
it was
a bit of a time capsule, you know, when it came out. And it was a huge phenomenon. And you know, I was just recently revising my 100 favorite movie list. And when I rewatched Wayne's World, I'm like, okay, that can come off. What other movies based on SNL characters would you praise or trash?
Go for it, Andrew. Okay. Most of them are trash.
I've honestly probably only seen half of them. That's
par for the course. It's okay.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed, and I think it deserves better than its Rotten Tomatoes score. It was MacGruber. I thought that was hilarious.
I saw MacGruber in the theater, and I liked certain aspects of it, but it lost me when he stuck like a celery stalk in his butt and was walking around with his pants around his ankles. I'm like, all right, this is juvenile all of a sudden. So there are elements of it I liked.
There are probably a good 15% of the movie I would personally change myself and be like, oh, okay, yeah, I wouldn't do this. But I didn't know if you knew this, but I think it was on Peacock maybe 2 or 3 years ago. They did a TV series.
Oh, I didn't
know. They brought
back
his sidekick, Ryan Phillip.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually really good.
Yeah.
In my opinion. I liked it. But the two Wayne's Worlds I really liked. It's Pat. I mean, like I said,
I never saw it.
It literally has a 0 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Right.
It's one of those movies, those really messed up movies my sister and I watched when we were probably way too young to have watched it. It had a budget of $8 million. Nick, can you read what it took in?
Unfortunately, that's a comma, not a decimal point. $60,822.
It brought in $60,000 on $8
million. Wow.
Oh, was this a producer's moment where they were trying like a tax scam, where they're trying to get
too much coke on floor 8H in the Rockefeller Center?
It was definitely a tax write-off, and then there are a couple of bodies buried in the Nevada desert.
There you go.
Now, did any of you guys see the Blues Brothers the sequel with?
That was a slap in the face.
After Belushi,
we lost Belushi.
Yeah.
You know, the Blues Brothers should have died with him, and it was a cash grab to try and bring that back.
It was a cash grab.
That's what I thought. I didn't see it, but that's how it kind of came across.
I'd forgotten some of these movies, but now looking at Andrew's list, it's, oh, my God.
Stuart Saves His Family with...
never saw that one.
What's his name?
The guy who was a politician.
Al Franken.
Al Franken.
I honestly don't even remember the sketches, barely.
Well, there was. He did have the classic sketch where he was talking to Michael Jordan. You ever see that sketch? And he's like, we'll call you Michael J. to protect your anonymity. And he goes, I know, Michael, that there are some times where you feel like you're no good and you can't shoot the ball into the basket. You ever feel like that? And he's like, no, not really. So he was funny on the show. Like, I thought Pat was funny on the show.
Yes.
But anyone who said, can we get a 90-minute movie out of these characters?
And there's way too many green lights on that. I mean, I was looking at Andrew's list, I mean, Coneheads.
A Night at the Roxbury.
I saw Night at the Roxbury in the theater, and I remember being entertained by it.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever seen it since. I did see it in the theater that one time, but it wasn't horrible.
And then two back-to-back ones, Superstar and Ladies Man.
Superstar, I think, was terrible.
I saw Ladies Man. I might be...
Molly Shannon, Superstar, and then Ladies Man, Tim Meadows. It's just...
Ladies Man, rocking a hot 11% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow. I'll go around the table here. If you had the green light power green light an SNL character or sketch, who would you green light today?
I know mine.
Today? Oh, my God. They haven't really seen a lot. The two that come to mind, and I don't want to because I already know when they do the repeat of these sketches, it fails. Kate McKinnon when she's the lady that's kidnapped by aliens.
Oh yeah. Imagine seeing that whole thing played out, the abduction.
Yeah,
and
that might.
That would be interesting.
That and then Keaton playing What's Up With That.
Really?
Oh yeah.
You would turn that into a movie? I don't know.
Where he'd have his own like TV show.
TV show, and he's and he's bringing people
What's
back
up
and
with that?
Yeah.
Mine, and I've seriously thought about. Could I write a 90-minute version of this, Stefan?
You were reading my mind. Yeah.
Stefan,
yeah.
He, because remember, they towards the end of Bill Hader's time there, they did an extended
about him getting married.
Yeah. He gets married to Anderson Cooper.
And Seth breaks it up. Yeah.
Yep. Paul Rubens is in that as Pee-wee. And when I saw that, I'm like, could they do a 90-minute? I mean, I don't know if it'd be great, but it would be hilarious.
Yeah.
If you brought in John Mulaney to write it.
Yeah, yeah.
Man.
It'd be interesting. Can you turn that into a 90-minute film? I will say
where
that.
Where it's just him going to different weird, messed up clubs around New York City.
Yeah, yeah.
On the lower east side of Manhattan.
That's wonderful, Andrew. You're just pitching the movie right now. It's going to be in someone's, hopefully someone's.
Oh, dude, I've got the Alexa thing. Alexa and I have pitched this movie to each other 20 times.
And I can see the trailer for it. This movie has everything. George, can you think of an SNL sketch?
I can think of two of them, but the stars are both dead. One's Phil Hartman, unfrozen caveman lawyer.
Yeah, that was a classic.
In my opinion, could have been good. And the other one was Chris Farley as the motivational speaker.
Oh, yeah.
God, that would have been so funny.
Oh, my God.
Where he would van down by the river.
Chris Farley would go around to, like, mid-size city, airport hotels. Like in like Cedar Rapids, Iowa, just giving
That's
these motivational
right.
speeches.
With people walking in with 70s leisure suits on and like, you know. I think both of those could have been funny, but I mean, there's a lot of skits that have a lot of really good ideas. But the problem is that I don't think, like when you watch them, I think the nature of SNL is that they come up with an idea, they get the host of the show up to speed, and then they dump it out, and it's almost like you ate too much too fast and you're just vomiting it out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They don't really realize a lot of those things fully, and a lot of times I think you miss some of the nuances, and I don't know if fleshing it out is the right term, but some of these I don't think were ever fleshed out really to the point, like I think, like as compared to something like The Simpsons, which is kind of along the same kind of gaggy humor,
right?
You have something that's a much longer time period. They come up with the ideas, then they start. You can still change things. You can still refine things. It's like the early Toy Story.
Plus,
you know, where it took a longer time.
Plus, with The Simpsons compared to SNL, you have an established world and you have established characters.
That's a very good point.
Whereas in SNL,
yeah,
the writing for each week starts at like 11 o'clock on a Tuesday night. Everyone's doing coke, and then they yeah. have to have it out by like. Like,
by rehearsals by Friday.
Yeah.
By dress, I think.
Dress either Friday night or Saturday, like afternoon. So the turnaround time on that's, and it's all ripped from the headlines most of the time. And it's hard to make something worthwhile.
There was a rumor.
I almost wish that they did, like, it had in the cast A and B where you could go at least 2 weeks and really have 3-4 days to flesh it out or something.
I think they might do that on certain sketches.
I think you're right.
Where some writers will have some sketches tucked away.
Yeah.
And then over the course of maybe a couple months, they'll say, hey, Lauren, can you take a third look at this? And he'll say, or not even necessarily Lauren, whoever the head writer is at that time, back in the days, Seth Meyers. And then they'll put together a really good sketch. That's how or why on that show, only one out of every three or one out of every four sketches are actually funny, to be honest.
You know what's interesting?
If not, sometimes I've watched a whole Saturday Night Live and just said, there's nothing redeemable. I got a couple giggles here, but it's mostly just garbage.
Yeah, you're just kind of waiting until Weekend Update comes up, and you're hoping that at least will redeem something.
Yeah, the Weekend Update is sometimes the funniest part. Go ahead.
Yeah, the funniest, most memorable sketches, I think, are ones they didn't expect to blow up. You know, I've heard stories where they say they'd get together in the writer's room, someone would pitch an idea, and all the writers are falling over laughing, and they put the sketch together, and then they do what they call the dress rehearsal in front of a live audience, and it tanks, and there's crickets, and they're like, why is this not working? And it gets pulled. But then you know, the last half hour of SNL is always sort of this dumping ground, and that's where some of the gems are found, where they think, oh, this isn't going to work. Like, you know, take Cowbell. Like, who would have ever predicted that Cowbell would have gotten as huge as it did? And I remember seeing some of those sketches live as they aired and, like, falling over, laughing, tears in my eyes. And but, so you can't predict which ones are going to blow up.
But in that one, it's Christopher Walken that sells that.
Yeah,
he
I got a fever,
yeah. And the prescription is more cowbell.
And that's what takes that sketch over the top, because otherwise it's just Will Ferrell being, which is funny. Will Ferrell is bothering all the people, banging this cowbell, but the guy goes like, "Fellas, I really think
you." Yeah, I got a fever.
I think there's also Will Ferrell's gut, which I think is also kind of another character.
It's not too small. Yeah.
It's hypnotic kind of thing. There was a rumor that with certain characters, like Opera Man, they were thinking, could we do this? Like, there's no way you can make a 90-minute out of that one. And Cantina Boy.
Oh, Canteen Boy. Yeah. That one was pretty controversial.
Yeah, that's another why they were like, ooh, we're not
for
doing
me.
This.
What was that? What was Canteen Boy?
Canteen Boy. That was Adam Sandler and Alec Baldwin.
The Boy
doing
Scouts.
Some inappropriate Boy Scout humor.
Adam.
I don't know about
Alec Baldwin was the Scoutmaster, like, oh, Canteen Boy. And it's Adam Sandler just having that weird smiling face. Just cuddle up near me. Look at the stars. And he's like, yes, this is really... This is
no, you can't go with that.
No. Yeah. Now, one of my favorite recurring sketches, and I don't know if this can be stretched out into a film. I would pay money to see it. But one of my favorite sketches over the last couple decades is the Californians.
Yes.
I love the Californians. Have you seen the Californians?
With Fred Armisen?
I haven't.
So it's a bunch of guys and girls with blonde hair, all typical Californians. And the bulk of their conversation is directions. Like, I just took the 10 to the 101.
I'll take the 401.
And if you get off at Mulholland, take a left turn at the Jack in the Box. That's like most of the
dialogue.
Then I
got stuck in Marina Del Rey.
and
it's almost Long Beach, man.
It's really funny.
It's a parody on a daytime soap opera, but all their dialogue is based on, like, you know, why don't you get out of here and take the 401 down to Mala Vista and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, if you're not from L.A. or that southern part, you wouldn't, but you just realize, okay, these are all directions. It'd be like, you know, you get off at I-75 and, you know, head down to Woodward, and then why don't you get off at 8 Mile? And like, okay.
So would it translate to a 90-minute film? I don't know, but I would sit there and watch it if they did like a cheesy drama soap opera style with terrible dialogue.
The most entertaining. Come to think of it, they did the Coneheads, which didn't pop up on our list. I forgot about that.
Yeah, that didn't do too well.
Did that
well
pop
either.
Up in yours? Pardon me, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No. You know, what's interesting is there are actors who were on SNL who did movies that if you didn't know better, you'd think they originated as an SNL sketch. And Austin Powers is a perfect example. Like, when people saw Austin Powers, they're like, I don't remember this on SNL. It's like, because it wasn't on SNL. Yeah. It was a routine that he did with his wife. Like, he would bounce around on the bed and strike poses and, you know, do I make you horny? And she was like, that might make a good character. But you would think that had roots in SNL, but it didn't.
But to be fair, his impression of Dr. Evil is of Lorne Michaels.
You're right. So. Yeah. That is,
it is.
Yeah, that's him impersonating Lorne Michaels.
He talks just like
shocked.
Just like him.
If you ever get a chance to YouTube it, it's Bill Hader impersonating, talking to Conan O'Brien about times he'd do a funny thing with Lorne, where he basically says, he imitates Lorne having famous, you know, dinners with like serial killers, and it's great. And Bill Hader nails the impersonation every time.
Yeah. Now, one thing, since we're on the topic, one thing that shocks the heck out of me is there's one performer, SNL performer, that comes to mind, who was so great on SNL, in my opinion, one of the greatest SNL performers of all time, who could not parlay that into a successful film career, and that is Dana Carvey.
Oh,
Dana Carvey did The Master of Disguise, which was a
Turtle was a disaster. He just didn't get
Why can't Dana Carvey find that vehicle that turned so many people before him into stars?
Is he the one who got the bee sting in his face turned big in the helicopter movie? I can't remember. He did a movie where he gets stung in the and his face turns huge. And it's kind of it's funny for about 2 seconds, and then there's nothing behind that.
Yeah. I'll never understand why Dana Carvey hasn't done it.
Because I think he got typecasted as a sidekick to Mike Myers with Wayne's World early on. I think that's what happened.
Wow, good insight. Yeah.
Very early, because then when they were all trying to branch out, he got lumped in with Mike Myers, and then Mike Myers was able to branch out to do Austin Powers before.
But Church Lady. I mean,
Church Lady was classic.
He had his
Johnny Carson, Casey Kasem.
That or you blame his reps for not finding the right script. Yeah. Maybe they're getting too selective.
I don't know.
Fire your agent. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, everyone was able to parlay that in, you know, Chevy Chase did, you know, not only Caddyshack, but like Fletch and vacation movies and all that. Why didn't Dana Carvey take that similar career path? I'll never understand that. He's so talented.
And maybe he should turn to Dan Aykroyd, because Dan Aykroyd, you know, was better at writing. He always enjoyed writing instead of acting. Yes. That's where you turn to, like, Dan, you got something for me?
Make me a Ghostbuster, please,
or something. But Dana Carvey, my theory was that bad representation and just got kind of typecast as Wayne's Worlds.
You know. I mean, even David Spade had a couple of gems. He was in Tommy Boy, which is one of my all-time favorite comedies, and. There were a lot of people who liked Joe Dirt. He was in Joe Dirt. So if David Spade can get a movie career based on his SNL,
I think he went TV because we realized when Chris Farley passed away, because they did three movies together.
Yeah, they did Black Sheep.
And then he's gone, and then he tries to do Joe Dirt, and like, oh, I don't know if you can do this solo, buddy. I don't know if you can carry a vehicle on your own. Then he goes to TV, and he stands out. As a supporting character, he stands out. When he doesn't have to carry a show, you're like, okay. I call it the Orlando Bloom syndrome.
Yeah.
Like, Legolas, you're going to be awesome. Like, can you carry Troy? Can I carry Troy? Oh, no, you can't do this.
We got about 10 minutes left. Something we hadn't scratched the surface on yet is the opposite of movies based on TV shows, and that's TV shows based on movies. For me, obviously, the gold standard is MASH. The movie was outstanding, which helped, but somehow they recast most of those characters for the TV series, and it went on to a longer run than the actual Korean War. And Alan Alda. He was just great in it. And even when they lost cast members on MASH, they replaced them with people who came on and held their own. And I think Radar is one of the only characters that appeared in both the movie and the TV series. There might have been another character.
Was Father McKay in both, or was it somebody else?
I don't know if he was in the movie or not. But like I said, that's the gold standard. That was just one of the greatest sitcoms of all time.
Was it Elliot Gould and Donald Sutherland?
Yeah, they were. Yeah.
God, they had great chemistry in the movie. Yeah. I wasn't alive at the time, or I wasn't old enough to know, but it would have been great to have them reprise their roles, because they kind of set the standard and these other guys were following in their wake. Now, they did make it their own.
Yeah, but these were movie stars, so I would imagine when someone said, oh, you want to do this as a TV series?
It would have
They didn't think job security. They thought TV is beneath us, so they had to recast
those roles. That's a good point.
Now, some other TV shows based on movies that immediately come to mind. For me, the first two seasons of Westworld, which was an HBO series, that was based on the old Western with Yul Brynner. Yeah. And I thought the first two seasons of Westworld were as good as TV gets. I never watched the third season when they sort of broke out of Westworld. I may have to revisit that at some point. Fargo comes to mind. Yep. Great movie that spawned a beloved TV show. And one that has a huge, huge following is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Christy Swanson played Buffy in the film.
Yep.
And it was largely forgettable. I mean, there's people who, you know, watched it or liked it, but the series transcended it. I mean, it eclipsed Buffy the Vampire Slayer. People love the TV series. And
you had spinoffs with Angel.
Yeah, exactly.
And Spike, too. Did Spike get his own TV show for a bit? No.
Was it really that good, the TV series?
People loved the TV series.
Wow. I see the Planet Fitness.
That was Joss Whedon did the series, right? Yeah. And one of the more beloved episodes, they did an entire musical episode, and people just friggin' loved it. So I never really got into Buffy, but I respect the popularity of it, that people, this is a TV series that was actually better than the movie, which is very, very rare. Can you guys think of any other TV shows that spawned from movies that really stand out?
I'm just now starting to get into this because I'm glad because I could wait. Cobra Kai, because it was Karate Kid. Yeah. Now Cobra Kai is the TV series on Netflix.
Yeah.
So it took me a while. I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to go back and see this. And then I'm on season one right now. I'm like, okay, this is entertaining. I can see why this is going to be.
I hear a lot of people really like it. Like yeah. families watch it because it's family entertainment. It's PG-13-ish. But
the antagonist, Johnny, like he's you kind of like, oh, my God, we get to dive into this character. I'm like, oh, okay, you're not as big of a a-hole as I was going to label you as. But, you know, that, and then the other one that comes to mind is I never was into this kind of stuff, but Friday Night Lights. I didn't care.
Never
much for the,
saw the movie, never saw yeah. the
but
TV
But for the TV series, I started watching because I'm a fan of the actors for some of the other shows, other series, and I was watching. I'm like, oh. Hey, high school football. Okay, wow, you guys are all nuts in Texas. Fair enough.
Now, I have watched the first three seasons of Cobra Kai, and I haven't watched it the last, 2 years or whatever, but it's actually really good.
Yeah.
And that's coming from me, who I only saw the first Karate Kid once when I was very young.
That's a win. But, that's one out of three. You're in Cooperstown.
But I remember liking it and then just diving back into it and so easily. And it's so likable, and there's some genuinely like funny parts.
Yeah, I mean, I was scared when they said, "Oh, we're doing a Karate Kid TV series called Cobra Kai." I'm like, "Miyagi's gone. What are we doing? Like, don't do this."
Yeah,
and then it's doing well. I mean, they got past it. They that was not a hurdle for them. That was not like an obstacle. It wasn't going to torpedo the series. So yeah.
I might have to check it out. I've never seen an episode. I love the original Karate Kid. I thought Pat Morita was just great. I think he was nominated for an Oscar for that role.
Really?
And I just saw an interview recently where he was talking about. When he auditioned for the role, he's like, I don't know where it came from, but they were like, all right, do your thing. And he started talking like Mr. Miyagi. And he's like, I don't know where it came from, but they freaking loved it. And it got him the role. And this is a guy who we knew as Arnold from Happy Days. Here he was, Mr. Miyagi. And he made that movie. He was so good in it. So
I would say, Joe, give the first like three episodes Cobra Kai a chance. I think you'll like it.
That's what I did. Yeah. I was basically like, okay, you got the
pilot.
I'm
going to take that recommendation, too, because I have two older sisters, absolutely love the show.
Oh, yeah.
I got to go back and check it out.
This comes on the investment you make. And you watch the pilot, and first thing, like, okay, can you carry me through?
Yes.
Otherwise, I don't want to do this. And I check IMDb, I check Rotten Tomatoes. I'm like, okay. And then I have friends going, hey, you need to check Cobra Kai. I'm like, all right, fine. Okay.
All right. Yeah. We're just about out of time. Any other titles come to mind as far as...
Can I make a quick recommendation for... Do you have a topic for next time?
Not yet.
Fire your agent. Actors who have fallen into the where they now file.
Interesting.
You know what?
All right. I'm sure there's something we could do with that big time.
Yeah.
I would like to hear that. That would be fantastic.
All right. Well, George, thanks for joining us today. It's always fun to have a guest.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate being a guest here, guys. Yes. Super fun to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. And thank you for listening. And we'll leave you with our little ditty, Come to the Movies.
Come to the movies. Watch Charlie Chaplin. And put some sunshine into your day. Forget the hard times, come to the movies, and try to laugh your troubles away.